that what God does is that the good ones always get paid back. They may suffer, but they get paid back. Maybe you could explain the phenomenon of a plague to me.
But isn't
the... Takes the Eve's argument, he takes a simple instance of the an experimental case of a plague. Is it true that plagues destroy the evil? Plagues would be a wonderful thing then. You don't have to notice any discrimination. The good and the evil are destroyed alike. That's his argument. You see it? That is the argument of Eve. It's the other psukkim are, we have to understand the other psukkim fit in, but the other psukkim are really, in a sense, disguised as argument. It's like flipped in there quickly. But that's the essence of the argument. You notice it? That's his argument. You maintain that no matter how much, she's just telling me that no matter how bad it is now, eventually I'm going to get everything good, right? All right, forget about me. What about a case of a scourge? In a scourge, what happens? Is that so? People that are good are saved, and the ones that are bad die? Nah. What does it say? He mocks the calamity of the guiltless. They go down too. That's all I'm saying. All I'm saying would be one that is very difficult to, very one that's very, you know, you're like you're giving an argument based on something that you have no proof for. Some, you get lost in the fantasy over there. And you're looking for something, some type of a solid argument. Some type of an argument which we could see, we can observe, and you're expecting to believe in something which is, tell me, there's a new thing after I die. Oh, that tremendous, and you have to show something. It's like just a fantasy. You're lost in fantasy. That's that argument also he has, alongside that argument, there is trailing alongside another point. Another point. What is the other point? The other point is that I can't argue with God. It's true that if you would put me to a debate with God, since there's no arbiter, we're not on equal terms, so God has all this power, so God will make me turn against myself. That's what he'll do. Right? That's his argument. One direct answer to Bildad, and the other one is a side argument. Now that I'm not having kind of direct confrontation with God, I'm just telling you between you and me that he's not so just up there. Offer me, and let not his terror make me afraid. Then would I speak and not fear him. That's an argument over there. He says the first one is he will mock the calamity of the guiltless. The earth is given into the hands of the wicked. He covers the face of Jezreel. If it be not he, who then is it? That if it be not he, who then is it? Is an argument against the an argument against another point that Bildad was saying. Bildad was saying that temporarily things happen and then God steps in and saves you. But just a second, everything that happens is from him, right? He can do everything. So what is this temporary? Even the temporary lapse, everything must be attributed to him. So therefore, you must say that he is momentarily unjust. See, justice could never be the end result. You can't say it's just because I gave you pain, I'll beat a guy up and then I'll go and give him $1 million. That's justice. Justice means, see, that would mean that the end result is equal. But justice is not an equality of end results. Justice means that God's very action, every action has to be just. And he can't, there cannot be, yeah, it's going to be two, it'll be an unjust action and then a compensatory action. The second action would be just if it was in terms of compensation, but the first action wouldn't be a just one. So you're going to say that God's not just. If it be not he, who then is it? So you're going to say that since God's responsible for everything, so even a temporary lapse, you're going to have to say he's responsible for, in which case you have to say he's not just. You see? That's where...
That's the main argument. Oh,
so really, so right. That's right. That's argument from within. Yeah. There are two arguments there. The first argument is the practical, and the second argument is the main breakdown.
From within.
That this cannot be. That God can't, there can't be a temporary lapse. Because then you're going to say he's responsible. Once he's responsible for everything, then you're going to have to say that he did an unjust action. That's impossible. That's very good. That's correct. Take a look at Bildad when he first started. Bildad said like this. He says, how long will you speak these things? He says, in three, does God pervert judgment? And does the Almighty pervert justice? You see? Does God pervert judgment and does the Almighty pervert justice? He means the great force, this great force that created the universe. Are you going to say that he perverts justice? So, Eve answered to both of his arguments. You see? First of all, he says, what are you saying really? You're saying since he is such a great force that he doesn't pervert justice. He says, you're right. He is a great force. And he is so great that he can even take the words of my mouth and twist them around. That's true. But that does not necessarily mean just because he is great and I'm powerless against him. I'm completely powerless. Even my very arguments are powerless. But this is no reason to assume, to maintain that what he's doing is just. He's powerful. Correct. So you are assuming, because you recognize, see, in other words, you're allowing, because you recognize that he is so great, that's why you're saying that he can't be unjust. He is very great. I can't deny that. He does the whole thing. He moves the mountains, turns them upside down, the whole thing, tells the sun not to rise, won't rise, everything. True. But this does not mean, this only means one thing. It means that I could never really, I can't really do anything. I'm powerless against him. So powerless that I can't even argue against him. But this does not necessarily mean that he is just. You see? Your premise, the premise of your argument, you see, in Builder there was two things. There was a premise, and then there was a conclusion. The premise was God, because he's so, the one who is the Almighty, is he going to be unjust? That's an impossibility. Therefore, you're going to have to interpret this as a pain and compensation theory. He says, compensation, he says, is apt. He says, now the only thing is, what about your premise? Your premise was that he's so great. You're right, he's great. But the greatness does not necessarily mean that he's just. See, greatness is power. I'm powerless against him. I can't argue with him. I can't step into the ring with him. But this doesn't mean that he's just. See? That's the point. Because there's two parts. Bildad started off with two things. He starts off, does God pervert judgment? And does the Almighty pervert justice? Then he goes into his theory of compensation. Right? So he gets him on both points. Both points. He's great. Created the universe, everything right. You're right. I'm powerless against him. It's true. But that doesn't mean he's just. See? That's the argument. That's the basic argument. How will you speak these things, seeing that the words of your mouth are as a mighty wind? You are talking against God. You realize who you're talking against? You're talking against God. God perverts justice? So he says, you're right. I can't talk against him. I can never argue with him. It's impossible. Right. But that doesn't prove that he's just. Fact remains that in the time of scourge, the good go down with the evil, and your theory of reward and kind of compensation is no good. Right. And it's true, I can't argue against him. I can't argue with him. That doesn't mean that he's just. That's why he answers both things. You understand what I mean? It's exactly what Bildad started off with. That's what he answers. Bildad has two parts. How could you talk against God? God, the Almighty, the Creator, has to be just. And he goes into his argument. He knocks them both down. He's great, yes, but that doesn't mean he's just. And the justice doesn't seem to, your theory of justice doesn't seem to work out too well. Theory of my life. I will give free course to my complaint. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say unto God, do not condemn me. Make me know wherefore thou contendest with me. This is funny. He starts with a different line. Is it good unto thee that thou shouldest oppress, that thou shouldest despise the work of thy hands, and shine upon the counsel of the wicked? Now he's starting off a new thing. He's not answering Bildad anymore. A new thing. Hast thou eyes of flesh, or seest thou as man seeth? And then he simply, argument over here. It's an interesting thing. Interesting thing. See, you'll destroy me. If I'm innocent, I still get destroyed. You see what he says that? If I be wicked, woe unto me. And if I be righteous, yet shall I not lift up my head. See? Hast thou not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? See? What is he saying?
You're the cause of what?
That's his argument. Like this. He says, Ashgacha Pratyas doesn't make any sense. Because if you're going to say Ashgacha Pratyas, then you're going to have to say that God's actions are purposeless. You see? That's what he's saying. Because he's saying that you gave me things, and then you don't allow me to use it. Right? It doesn't make any sense. It'll come out that God is performing futile actions. Never mind the injustice part. But definitely God is not going to perform something that's futile, right? So therefore you must say, if you're going to maintain Ashgacha Pratyas, you're going to have a contradiction between the concept of God as a being that creates within purposeful creation and between what he does, the actuality. Because the actuality is that there's no purpose, I'm destroyed, right? So therefore, that's why he says, did you pour me out as milk and curdle me like cheese? That means like this. That means he's starting to question already. Did you? Is that really true? The question is it really so that there is Ashgacha Pratyas? That's his question. Of course, the whole system doesn't seem to lend itself to that explanation. See, Eve was making the next logical step. This is the first philosophical step. He says it would seem to be that God is not really concerned with the individual. Because if you're going to say that he's concerned with the individual, then you're going to have to say all these ridiculous contradictions. See? That's why the Rambam says that Eve's position was the theory of Aristotle. Chazal say on Eve, when he made these statements, Chazal say like this. Gemara, page 300, the Rambam says like this. Explains that there is no hope after death, so that the cause of the misfortune of the righteous man is nothing else but entire neglect on the part of God. So I want you to know, why did he say that there's no such thing as Olam Haba? The reason why he rejected Olam Haba is, first of all, it would be unjust for God to torture a person in this world and then pay him back in the next world. That's an impossibility. See? So that idea of Olam Haba is done. Out. All right. He wasn't so surprised, the Rambam says. Hast thou not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? This is one of the different views held by some thinkers on providence. Our sages condemn this view of Job as mischievous and express their feeling in the words like the following. Dust should have filled the mouth of Job. Job wished to upset the dish. Job denied the resurrection of the dead. He commenced to blaspheme. Okay? Here is where the whole argument, it's not just that one sentence, because that one sentence you could say, he's saying it rhetorically. Didn't you pour me out as cheese? You know, doesn't really prove from this sentence what the Rambam's saying. Because he's saying it rhetorically. But the Rambam says no. If you look at the whole paragraph, you'll see. The paragraph is he's setting the scene of the argument against the idea of Hashgacha Pratis. He's showing the absurdity of Hashgacha Pratis. That's the whole argument. And that's it. That's why he denied the resurrection of the dead. Because that's all Hashgacha Pratis. The whole thing, that's why they said dust should have filled his mouth, because he's denying Hashgacha Pratis. That's the theory of Aristotle. That's what he avoided. That's the point that he was developing at this point, at this stage. Okay? He answered Bildad with his 2 points, his premise and his argument, and then he showed his own little bit of philosophy. Yeah. Makes a little headway into the situation. First takes care of his adversary, and then he makes his own little step. Okay? Even philosophical, you have to be very careful with philosophical speculation. Because most people in their philosophical speculation are searching for certain things to be true. They want certain things to be true. And even after, like for instance, at one point they might have really accepted the idea of an Olam Haba being compensation. Then they get a little bit more educated. They say, well, we can't say that way, but they'll still try to substitute something else for that. Because they're not really investigators. Eve was an objective investigator. Objective investigator doesn't buy these ridiculous philosophical platitudes. You know what I mean? Most people want an answer, so we'll accept any answer, any crazy answer we'll accept. Eve was really was trying to think through the matter carefully, logically. Not to believe anything. If he wants to, he could believe that pain is good. He could believe that there's a tremendous big happy hunting grounds. The Indians, I mean, all these primitive tribes had this idea of compensation after death. The Egyptians, all of them. Basically a primitive idea. But it's a primitive idea which many times philosophers buy because they sophisticate the primitive idea. But basically they're still in the primitive. You know what I mean? That's the application of the primitive idea. Satisfies primitive idea in a sophisticated way where it's palpable to the intellect. You know what I mean? But a real philosopher wouldn't accept such nonsense. Yes, he doesn't deny God like Eve says, because he likes that little comfortable feeling. He feels very nice, you know. The other guy's suffering doesn't bother him too much anyways, you know. You can say it's a shame, no, that's it. But it doesn't really bother him that much. But if you were in that situation, you'd also say the same thing. It's not something that was so fantastically philosophical that I had to go study, make new studies in physics and metaphysics for it. It's a simple result that the person could see. The only thing is that most people are not in the psychological situation to react that way. They have psychological motivations for saying something else. You see, he was stripped of these psychological motivations. So therefore, he said exactly what he did, which is naturally a logical thing, logical conclusion. That's why Chazal say, though, that dust should have filled his mouth, because he's denying the whole Hashgacha Pratis. So the whole thing is just wiping it off. Okay? What the Rambam explains, that in philosophy, it doesn't matter, really. In philosophy, you're not talking about the blame of the individual. In other words, the Rambam says people that believe that this is the part they heard that they say from Chaim. They ask for Chaim. They say, what would you say about a person who prays to God and who envisions a man with a beard in the Shemayim? You know, looking down at him, you know, he has some type of vision like that, you know. Sometimes not exactly, but you have that feeling too. People have that feeling. It could be very disguised too. You might not really picture, you know, you're not supposed to picture. Okay, so take away the picture. But the same feeling that led to the picture is still there. So, he says, what about a person that thinks that way? And he davens to, with all his heart, he davens to God. But he thinks, you know, he has it in mind that there's something up there, some physical form there. So what kind of a din is it? What kind of a person is this? So Reb Chaim said, he's Nebuch and Apikeres. The guy means well. He's davening, he's praying, he's doing everything, keeps mitzvahs and everything. He has one thing in his mind, he thinks that there's something up there, right? But he's an apikeres. It's unfortunate. It doesn't mean to be the way. But he is an apikeres. In philosophy, it's not so important. In real philosophy, whether the person is to blame or not, that's a separate thing. The Rambam mentions that if a person believes that God has an emotion, that God has certain feelings towards him or towards anybody or anything, he says, this individual is worse than the Avdei Avodah Zarah. He says, and if you'll say it's not his fault, because he was raised this way, he says the Avdei Avodah Zarah wasn't their fault either. They were also raised that way. But still in all the mitzvah was Leisach HaChareim Tacharimim Leisach HaYakol Neshama. Right? So the question of fault or not is a different ballpark. See? Chazal do say that Eiv, why was God good to Eiv? Because he wasn't to blame, because he said it in pain, they say. So it wasn't really his. But the ideas were, when he said these ideas, he was far away from God. You have to understand, in philosophy, if a person has, the only way we relate to God is through true ideas. The more true ideas we have, the closer we are to him. And the further, and the more false ideas we have, the further away we are from him. When he says, dust should have filled his mouth, it meant that at this point, he was far away from the true idea of God. But the reasons were, that's a separate thing. That HaKadosh Baruch has his own ways of dealing with his world. We don't know. It's sealed that way. A person agrees because a person is not ready, and he's allowed to take up some of these arguments, and he might not be aware that there is something deeper over here. He could walk away with one of these arguments and be satisfied for the rest of his life. Everything will fit in perfectly. Compensation. I said so far the Namite and said, my words be answered, and should a man full of talk be accounted right? Thy book. I'll tell you frankly. I mean, it's difficult to understand what how he worked it in here. The Rambam says that Sofer's philosophy, as he was, that holds that the divine will is the source of everything that happens. No further cause can be sought for his actions, and it cannot be asked why he has done this and why he has not done that. That which God does can therefore not be explained by the way of justice or the result of wisdom. His true essence demands that he does what he wills. We are unable to fathom the depth of his wisdom, and it is the law and rule of this wisdom that whatever he does is done because it is his will and for no other cause. So far, therefore, says to Job, but oh, that God would speak and open his lips against thee, and that he would show thee the secrets of wisdom, for wisdom has two portions. Know, therefore, that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. Canst thou by searching find out God? Canst thou find out the Almighty unto perfection? When you take a look at this, you don't see in what way the words of Sofer are in line with what the Rambam says. The Rambam's saying a theory here. You know what the theory is? The theory is this. It's not a step theory. We know that you cannot ask the question. We know by now that you cannot ask the question, who created God? Why is that an absurd question? Because the question, who created God, is only a legitimate question if the thing, if you're saying, who created the table? What you mean is, according to the laws of nature, this table should not be here. Therefore, there must be someone that did an action which produced it. Right? What you're saying is that the table, the existence of the table, is not necessary. It's possible. Right? But when you're discussing God, what we say is, the definition of God is he whose existence is necessary. Once you say his existence is necessary, you can't ask who created him. Because by that question presupposes that he the fact that he might not have existed. But if his existence is necessary, he can't ask who created him, because of necessity that's his nature. It's like asking why is water wet, right? That's the nature. You can't ask why is something what it is. Now God's nature is to exist, so you can't ask who created him. Who created him would mean that his nature, that he only has possible existence. But since he has necessary existence, right? So therefore, there's no more question of how he exists. Okay. Really, you cannot ask, why did God create... That's why the whole question of fairness went through this many times. There's no question. So why did God create one person less intelligent than another? It is his will to create as he sees fit. You see? Now, he has the right to create as that's his nature. See? Everything, if you ask, why does God create? You can't say, well, God thought of a reason why he's going to create, because you're going to have to say at one time he thought of a reason. Before that, he didn't have the reason. There's a change in his essence. That's impossible. You have to say, this is part of his nature. His nature is existence, and part of that nature is that he creates. Okay? This is clear. Now, you could never ask a question that could be attributed to his essence. In other words, you can't say, why is this so? Because anything which could be attributed to his essence, that's the way it is. Must be that way. Now, therefore, he's saying that what Sofer was saying was the following. You're asking, why does God do this? So he says, why God does what he does is only attributable to his essence and to nothing else. Now, if you understand his essence, then you'll understand why this happens. But could you understand his essence? That's why he says, that's what the Rambam's pointing at in one part of what he says. He says, but oh, that God would speak. He says, canst thou by searching find out God? Canst thou find out the Almighty unto perfection? He means it's inherently an impossible proposition for man who has possible existence, who was a result of God's creation, to ever fathom the Creator himself. It's inherently impossible. So that means man can never know God's essence because of his station in the universe. He can't. He's a different type of creature. The only result of God is necessary existence. Inherently, he could never comprehend God. So he could never know God's essence. So therefore, he could never understand God's actions. So therefore, all your questions are nonsense. That's what he's saying. It's a good argument. I understand the argument. That's a philosophical argument. And the Rambam in the Mora, the Rambam in the Mora takes this argument, he pushes it around. Sometimes he considers it a very good argument. Sometimes he doesn't consider it a good argument. You have to understand clearly why. In different places he accepts it, he sort of accepts it, in another place he rejects it. It's an interesting class. Where did the Rambam get this out of these words? See? He's not saying that. What he's saying is, on the contrary, he says, God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. He says that you really, doesn't he mention that he said, stretch out your hands towards him. If iniquity be in thy hand, put it far away, and let not unrighteousness dwell in thy tents. Surely then shall thou lift up thy face without spot. Yea, thou shalt be steadfast and shall not fear. So he's saying on the contrary. He's saying that if you really remove your hate, your sin, then God will help you. He tells him what he's going to do for him. Your life shall be clearer than the noonday. He says you'll forget your misery. He says it'll be like waters that passed away. So apparently he's arguing that God has some type of justice. On the contrary, I don't see if the Rambam's argument, if the Rambam is saying, what is this, the Rambam is saying is true, that Sofer was arguing that God you can't question, that everything's a result of his essence. So if that's the case, so then you can't speak of any types of justice. You can't say search out now God will be good to you. Contrary, you don't know what his will is. You don't know what his will is, so you never know. He might not be good to you if you search out your heart. Maybe the contrary. Maybe if you do evil, it'll be good to you. It's all the result of his will. His will is the result of his essence. His essence we can't know. Simple formulation. Right? Where's the Rambam see this in here? That's hard to understand. Seems like the Rambam is pushing this argument into Sofer's mouth. But when you look at the actual psukim, it seems to be just the opposite. He singles out one pasuk where he says, "Who can know the Almighty?" They all say, "Who can know the Almighty?" They all say that. That's not particular to Sofer. You know what I'm asking? Sometimes accepts the answer philosophically. It's a sound answer. Philosophically, you can't beat it because everything stems from his essence. Wrong answer. Sometimes the Rambam says you can't maintain that way. Sometimes he says you must maintain that way. Sometimes you can't maintain. The Rambam's funny in the Mora. He's very elusive. You have to try to figure him out over there. That's one of the things that the Rambam says in the beginning. He's not giving away the... Seriously. But you see the way he wrote, clearly, like that's one example of where there's a tremendous idea there which he's concealing. See? Where he takes one idea, one philosophy, and one time he praises it, the other time he says possible, the other time he rejects it. Same exact philosophy. Your mother, he has some idea there. He doesn't want to let out too easily. That's the way it works. The Rambam says that Sofer is saying that it's all God's will. It's all God's will. That's what Sofer is saying, right? Questions you don't see in Sofer as God's will, right? On the contrary, you see, he keeps on saying that he sins. Right? He keeps on saying that he sins, right? Not that it's God's will. Alright? Alright, what does it say? He says like this. This is his answer. So far on Amasi. He says, but oh that God would speak and open his lips against thee, and that he would tell you the secrets of wisdom. That sound wisdom is manifold. Know therefore that God exacts of you less than your iniquity deserves. Alright? So far, all he's saying on the contrary. He's saying that really, he's saying the same thing as Eliphaz. Namely, that really he really is a sinner, and therefore he deserves more. And on the contrary, God is being very good to him. God's only taking less than he deserves. Which, the same exact argument as Eliphaz, that he really is a sinner. Right? Okay. Oh, God. That's what? 17. 4:17. Shall mortal man be just before God? Shall a man be pure before his maker? Behold, he puts no trust in his servants. And his angels are charged with folly. How much more than the dwelling in the house of clay, whose foundations in the dust, or crushed before the moth? It takes morning and evening, they are shattered. Alright? Anyway, so therefore he says, that what? Man is unjust. That's the way around. That's the way other flesh. That's what other flesh says.
But man is born unto trouble, as young birds take up the front. What do you mean?
The reason why the Rambam decided that Eve didn't look into his sins enough is because he says like this. He says, you see what it says in 7? He says, what does he say? He says, can you find out the deep things of God? Can you attain unto the purpose of the Almighty? You see? What does that mean? If God would show you his wisdom, he says this, but all that God would speak and open his lips against you, he would tell you the secrets of wisdom. That sound wisdom is manifold. Know therefore that God exacts of thee less than your iniquity deserves. Then he says, can you find out deep things of God? Can you attain it to the purpose of the Almighty? Well, what does that got to do with it? If he's discussing his sins, it has nothing to do with the purpose of the Almighty. You see? So he says, it is as high as heaven. Who can know it? Deeper than the netherworld. Who can know that? Right? The measure is longer than the earth, broader than the sea. Correct? So you see one thing. You see that he's tying in Eve's sins somehow with God, with God's. He's discussing God's nature now. So suddenly he's discussing God's. He's definitely discussing God's nature. Now our question was this: that if that's the case, that he's discussing God's nature, so why did he say to him that that God is exacting less than you deserve? If it's just God's will and whatever God wishes, that's it. So then, what's the point? I mean, whatever he wants, that's all he wants to destroy. Destroy you. You know what I mean? What's the whole point? Yeah, he's saying that he sinned. I mean, right? What do you mean he sinned? This is God's will. Is that he should suffer? And that's it.
And he says,
can't ask any more questions. Yes.
He says at the end also that if he has a sin, he should put it out of his tents and
that's right.
Be good.
That's right. If he has a sin, he should put it out and everything will be good. And the answer is like this, really. The answer is that what he was saying was not that there is no such thing as justice. See, not that there's no such thing as justice. Not that God doesn't have the idea of justice. The idea of justice exists in God. But the only thing is that there is a system of justice. But the system of justice is not based upon man. It's based upon God. In other words, like this. When God created man, he definitely created man with a just system into which he placed man. But the just system is that man has to abide by God's format. See, it's not that God abides by man's format. In other words, like this. Let's say, for instance, a person does a sin. So we assume that God will judge the sin based on the man, how he was at the time, and all these different circumstances, in accordance with his nature. See? That's one idea of justice. That's justice which is man-oriented. In other words, man is the one that's the center of justice, and then God works accordingly. But there's another kind of justice. He's saying that the justice is God-oriented. In other words, God creates man, and he expects man to fulfill certain... Man must fulfill certain obligations. See, now regardless of the state of the man, there's no... You can't say the man's... I'll say, well, I'm weak today, so I can't do it. I mean, this is the system he has to conform to. There is a given system, but the system he has to conform to is a system which God decides beforehand. God decided when he placed man in this world that this is the system that man must abide by. That's his will. His will is that man should exist and fulfill the system. Now, therefore, man can't look at himself and say, well, look, I couldn't do it today, I'm tired. Right? That's too bad. The thing is, you have to fulfill his will. To say that God is unjust is not... What does it mean that God is unjust? We one time said, you can't just say God is unjust. Unjust to who? He has the right to create whatever he wants. But the point in God's, when we say that God is unjust, man can be unjust. Within society, you say it's unjust. The society has a system. But God is outside the system. God has the right to create. Let's say God wants to create a decrepit being. Why can't he create it? And what's unjust about it? Unjust to who? Just a second. Unjust is not being just to anybody. But the answer is, if God would create something which is decrepit, he would be violating... It would mean that what he's doing is that he is not doing an action which is rational or purposeful. Because to create, that would be an imperfection. To create a being which can't sustain itself or which suffers is a lack in God's perfection as a supreme being. You know what I mean? Not because of justice. God doesn't have to worry about being just. Because justice is only between two people who are within a system and have certain obligations to each other. That's what justice... You can only have justice if you have two existing beings that have mutual obligations. Say, well, there's justice here. But God doesn't have anybody else he has to be contend with, so he can do whatever he wants. You see? You understand? Went through this one. So you ever went through that?
Yeah.
When you say the man is not just, what does it mean a person's not just? It means he's living with somebody else that has rights, just like he does. And he is violating their rights. You can't speak of God in those terms. Who's God with that he has to worry about their rights? God is a sole creator. He can do whatever he wants. You can't speak of God being... You know what I mean? Justice only makes sense if you're in a given framework where you have rights and somebody else has rights. You say, hey, that's not just. You're violating his rights. Whose rights does God have to worry about?
Well,
you know what I mean? I mean, justice doesn't apply to God. The whole idea doesn't apply to God. Yes? That's what I was just talking with somebody. I was just talking with somebody yesterday.
So,
yeah, right. I told him that this individual is contemplating... Along with somebody, somebody's contemplating leaving Yadis. So I asked them if they believe that it's fair to murder somebody. I said, no, I think it's a terrible thing. And in that respect, Yadis is right, the ethics are right. I said, what basis do you have to assume that you can't take somebody else's life? And these people want to abstract the ethics of the system and leave the rest. But rationally, it's absurd. Because the moment you say, what basis do you have to say that it's wrong to kill somebody? On the contrary, I'll tell you it's very good to kill somebody. Survival of the fittest, why not? What's wrong?
Right.
You go by whoever's strong. If you can kill me, get away with it, it's fine. Why do you say it's such a terrible thing? You have no basis to assume that way. You can only say that if you say that there is a divine being whose will it is that this individual should exist. So then there's an objective thing. You're violating something in reality. But if there's no divine being, then what is it? Nothing. You can't walk away with the ethics and leave it. You say, well, the only thing you can say is, I don't like to kill people. Well, you mustn't get upset if somebody else...
That's our concept.
Yes. Especially if you're telling... Now, the question is, so in other words, the only reason that the only idea of justice, the only reason we apply justice to God is because, say, God as a perfect being can't do something which is nonsensical. Right? To create, which is purposeless, to create a being who will destroy himself and can't exist, you see, and suffers, is an irrational action. God's goodness and God's justice and God's perfection all comes from one source, from his knowledge, you see. As knowledge dictates that you don't create something which is purposeless, something which is a decrepit being which will suffer and die. There's no purpose in its existence.
So why do you assume
the purpose might be hidden to us, but
why is it assumed that?
No, there's no. Unless it has a purpose in the larger framework.
In a larger framework, sure. We can't always judge if it has a purpose.
I know, but I'm saying within a given framework.
Concept
is that they
must have a purpose.
Must have a purpose. Yes. The action must be a purposeful one. That's why the Rambam says in the Mora, this is one of the Yisraelis, says that God does not perform Malachas Avtala. Malachas Avtala, all of this, means that something for nothing. There's no part of the body that is purposeless.
Silly presence.
God's justice, God's goodness, God's mercy, everything stems from his wisdom. That's what it is. His goodness is part of, his mercy is a rational action. Why? Because with mercy you help someone to exist.
We interpret his mercy. That's just the way we interpret it.
The merciful way. What we do is merciful in the merciful way. You see, God does in the rational way. Okay? Now. So therefore, it's like this. So he's saying that your argument is, Eve's argument is, that God's actions were purposeless. That was his argument. Did he say that? He said, as far as his own existence is concerned, that his whole life is purposeless? Did you mention that was one of his arguments there?
Yeah, Chris said that was me.
There was no purpose in this. He mentions a few times.
First of that I was born.
What?
First of that I was born.
Yeah, there's no purpose in his being born. And better than he should be in the grave. He says in a few places, says, why do you... Wherefore? 10:18.
What?
10:18. As a matter of fact, the argument precedes immediately so far. 10:18. Fellas, come on. Talk to me. Talk to me. What has now brought me forth out of the womb? Would that I had perished and no eye had seen me. I should have been as though I had not been. All this are now my days few. Cease then and let me alone. All these arguments over here is...
no purpose, no existence.
Yeah, there's no purpose. So it comes out that God is... God is right. God is not just in the sense of justice that should be applied to a supreme being. See, that's the type of justice talking about. So that's how he answers directly. He says, God really is, you're saying that God isn't just. In other words, an imperfection in him. Not that he has to abide by a system of justice, but it's an imperfection. It's not an imperfection. Because he has his purposes in creating. Right? He has his purposes. You, if you don't abide by his, of course man will be able to exist. If man doesn't exist, then there's no purpose in God doing it. But God's justice, his system demands certain things of man. And if man doesn't fulfill those demands, those requirements, so then he will be slain. There'll be trouble, you see? That's the system that is. But it's not a system worked. And you can't sit down and say, well, I think that today I was a good boy or I was a bad boy. It's all dependent upon what his will is. You have to abide by his will. You can't abide by his will, then you're going to suffer. And this isn't an injustice in God. God created you. You can't come here and say, look, this is a nice system of justice that I would choose. You can't choose your own system. God created you. He put you in a certain system. You have to conform to that system. If you don't conform to that system, then you're going to suffer. So the justice and injustice is not dependent upon your internal situation. There's an objective situation here with requirements, objective requirements that you have to meet. If you fail to meet them, then you're going to perish. You see? That's the way it is. Now, I'll say, but it's not fair. Really not fair. Who's God to be fair to? This is the reality. This is the way things are. And you have to abide by it and take the consequences. You have no choice in that. This is the system that you're born into. See? That was Sofran Amasi's title. Now, you can't say God is unjust, because we're not worried about God's justice vis-a-vis another being. It's only insofar as he's a supreme being, so it has to be rational. He is very rational. This is the purpose. A man's purpose is cut out for him to do X, Y, Z, whatever it is. And if he doesn't do it, then he's going to suffer. That's the way it is.
That's the purpose of the suffering.
Okay.
Nope. You don't know.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how it works. Maybe the suffering is because God takes away his ashgacha or whatever. It could be a thousand things. You know?
What's the part about God's suffering?
What he's saying is like this. What he's saying, I can't understand God's will like this. That, you see, so your question would, the next question would be, why should God want this? That would be the next logical question. So why does God want this crazy system? Why does he set up this arbitrary system? Crazy system I have to abide by, it's not within my nature. Right? The answer is, to know the answer to that is, to know the answer to God's essence. Because his will is part of his essence. Right? So you have this supreme being, you see, who's the supreme being, whose nature is has a certain nature. Now, unless you, if you understood that nature, you'd understand why he created this and why he created the system. This is all in order to be able to understand that. You have to understand his nature. That you can't understand. So therefore, there's nothing against it. Your arguments are ridiculous.
Which question?
The next question would be, why did God create? So he's telling me that God created an arbitrary system, not geared to man, right? Why did God create this arbitrary system?
No, he's saying it's arbitrary.
No, he's saying it's not man-based. It's not based on man, right? The system of justice is not based on man's nature.
Right.
Not based on man. It's not an individual system. It's a system that God institutes, and you have to abide by that system.
Right?
Oh, the question is, why does God do that? Oh, you have to know his nature. His nature you can't know, so you can never know the answer to that.
That's
what I mean. Because if you would tell me the system fits into man, then you don't have to know God's nature. You see, it fits in. It's not. But once you say that it's part of God's system, that's his will. So then you can't. Then the only question you ask is why, like for instance, say, why do a certain amount of people die at a certain time? A certain plague. So he would say very simply, you know why? The plague is there for, it's God's will the plague should occur because of certain consequences, right? Okay, so then since it's his will, so therefore these people have to die. I mean, they were created by his will and they die by his will. There's nothing rational about that. So, but why is his will that such situations should exist? You have to know his nature in order to know that. Yeah, you have to know his nature.
He
can never know his nature, so therefore he could never know.
So can we interpret the course of events that they have?
If you tell me it's based upon man's nature, then you don't have to know his nature. You don't have to know man's nature, because that's not the answer. But if the answer lies in his nature, now you have to go back to him. Oh, him, we can't know. See, that's what he's saying.
So that the argument's ridiculous.
Yes.
Can we ever interpret the course of events?
Now, there's only one sentence that remains.
What?
So this is God's will. In other words, you can't see the question, this is God's will, so this is the way it should occur. That's it.
It's not based on an individual thing.
Could you take this?
It could be an individual. Yes, it could be an individual thing. His will is not an individual way.
You can.
He has a purpose in creating.
His purpose, understand, and therefore the total destruction of mankind.
Well, it might be, but that's a small thing for God. Okay, let's go. Yeah, but all the, you can't answer that. That's only because emotionally you want it to be for your benefit. But it's not necessarily for your benefit. You are just a means in God's will. You're just an accident in God's will.
The whole idea is knowledge, and therefore the destructive thing.
Wait a minute. Good, okay. Let's go.
Michael.
He's saying,
if he went strictly according to the system of justice, you'd be dead. Since he doesn't, and he uses Rahmana to offset that, I think that's what he was saying about.
That's not a bad idea. He wants to say.
Michael.
He's saying,
if he went strictly according to the system of justice, you'd be dead. Since he doesn't, and he uses Rahmana to offset that, I think that's what he was saying about.
That's not a bad idea. He wants to say that it means Midas Rachamim. In other words, the fact is that God does work within your framework to make it possible to go on. To a degree, he works within your framework.
That was one idea.
His system is so just that you'd never be able to make it. So he works within your framework in order to...
That's part of the system.
What? Man has a certain purpose he's supposed to fulfill, right? But then if he fails, he could let him perish, or he could step in and act. So he says God does that. Because really, God creates this. God has a certain plan mapped out for man.
Blueprint
mapped out for man. Now, when man fails, God intercedes. With his hashgacha, and he helps the guy. See? So he really exacts less from the person than he really deserves. Actually, if he wouldn't do that, man would perish. But you see, he comes in and saves man. So therefore, he's exacting less than he deserves. I was thinking along the same lines. Yes. Benefit of the moment you conform to his system. That's what he says. His system is not. You can't sit back and say I'm just. I'm a just man. I'm a good man. Based on what do you make the assessment? Because you feel you did this right, you did that right, you're a nice guy. That's not the way. There's a certain system you have to follow that God set up. Now you follow that system 100%, then you can say you're just. You don't follow it, you're not. Now, there, obviously, you messed up the system. So, therefore, you have to return to the system. That's what it tells me to do.
So, in terms...
You can't come along and say, you can't make a plan and be your own judge.
So, in terms...
There's a fixed law here. Fixed law that you have to operate by. That's his argument.
So, in terms of particular men...
Okay?
So, in terms of particular men, it could be that the system is irrational. In terms of particular men, right?
Particular men? In terms of particular men?
No,
he's not denying Ashgacha. He said...
specific person might turn out to be an
For this person?
For a specific person, it could be that system.
No, nothing to talk about that.
That's a detour. Yeah. We didn't come through.
Okay. We passed over it. I just wanted to show you. I got work on. What he has said in 9. Fellas, look,
what
back
matter?
There. Hey, fellas, look. I mean, if you want to talk outside, do me a favor. It's just annoying to me. I don't care if you talk, but...
Sit out, 9?
9, 11. I just wanted to show you that Eve's level was such that he knew that God is non-physical, that God is non-material. He says it openly over there. You know, some people, in 9-11, he says, when he talks about how great God is, he says, "Lo, he goeth by me, and I see him not. He passeth on also, and I perceive him not." Okay? Eve was on a level. Eve knew that... That God is not to be perceived by the senses. He sees him not, nor is he to be grasped by his by the human mind. That's what he says up there. Interesting thing.
A nice way to put it.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I got
it.
He was on a level. It wasn't stomach floor. Alright? Okay. Then Job answered and said. He said like this. Alright, let's I don't know if you have to record all this, but I'm just gonna read through it, alright?
Alright.
Ye are the people. You are the people, boy. You are the people. V'imachem tamus fachma. V'imachem tamus fachma. And when you die, all knowledge will die with you. That's how wise you are. He says, but I have understanding as well as you. I have knowledge as well as you. I am not inferior to you. Yea, who knoweth not such things as these? It's a funny thing. It's like he's he's supposed to get arguments. Yeah, three possibilities. I am as one that, and then he goes, and now he goes into his state of being again. I am as one that is a laughing stock to his neighbor, a man that called upon God and he answered him. He answered him means the other way. He gave him the other way. The just, the innocent man is a laughing stock, a contemptible brand in the thought of him that is at peace, at ease, a thing ready for them whose foot slippeth. The tents of robbers prosper, and they that provoke God are secure in whatsoever God bringeth into their hands.
Old argument,
huh? But ask now, he goes into later, even more better, another few parakamas. He's just starting to bring this argument. Later he goes into more detail about how successful the wicked are. And now they don't have to worry about anything. Not only the life, but the death also. But ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee. Or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not among all these that the hand of the Lord has wrought this?
What?
Has wrought this, that it's God's hand that has created the situation. All that he's discussing. He says he himself is suffering, he's in mockery, right? He says this is caused directly by God. He says, also, the tents of robbers prosper. This is caused by God. He's assuming now the Hashgacha. And this is assuming the Hashgacha practice. But since he starts, sways up and back. Eve sways up and back between Hashgacha and not Hashgacha. He assumes the Hashgacha and he argues against it. See? Then he sways a little bit that maybe there's no Hashgacha. But the arguments are on two premises. He works on two premises. Here he's working on the premise that there is Hashgacha. It's like this. In whose hand is the soul of every living thing? And the breath of all mankind. Does not the ear try words, even as the palate tasteth this food? Okay.
Are you recording?
Okay. Or maybe she records him. I just said something. Or maybe she records him. Okay.
Put it on.
This is for Leslie.
For Leslie? No, I record for Leslie. Oh, you record. Is this what? All right. So here he's arguing again. Here he's arguing in favor of the Ashgar. He says, is wisdom with aged men and understanding in length of days? Because they were old. So he said, does that mean you're wise just because you consumed a certain amount of food? Behold, he breaketh down, and it cannot be built again. He shutteth up a man, and there can be no opening. Behold, he withholdeth the waters, and they dry up. He also sendeth them out, and they overturn the earth. With him is strength and sound wisdom. The deceived and the deceiver are his. He leadeth counselors away stripped, and judges maketh he fools. He looseth the bonds of kings, and bindeth their loins with girdle. He leadeth priests away stripped, and overthroweth the mighty. He removeth the speech of men of trust, and taketh away the sense of the elders. He poureth contempt upon princes, and looseth the belt of the strong. He uncovereth deep things out of darkness, and bringeth out to light the shadow of death.
He increaseth the nations and destroyeth them. He enlargeth the nations and leadeth them away. He taketh away the heart of the chiefs of the people of the land, and causeth them to wander in a wilderness where there is no way. They grope in the dark without light, and he maketh them to stagger like a drunken man. Okay? Yeah. That's good. Go ahead. Give me an example.
When he says,
the nations and leads them away. He takes away the heart of the chiefs of the people of the land and causes them to wander in a wilderness where there is no way.
Right.
He does absurd actions. In other words, we see, if you take a look objectively at the social system, the social order of mankind, you'll find that God's actions are absurd. Absurd. We're not discussing, of course, man is absurd.
I think he's saying that the system that he gave us is absurd.
See, man is definitely absurd, but the point is, even in a situation where you have a good leader, we finally have a situation where people want to be good and you have a good leader, all of a sudden the leader gets struck down with a heart attack and then people go crazy and that's it. So they almost made it, you know, boom, that's it. That's what he's saying. He's saying, if you look, what?
Is he answering Sophie's,
He's saying men come to power, you know, or a situation will arise where you have good people doing the right thing, and all of a sudden, boom, one guy gets hit, and that's the end of it. That's what he's saying. So he says that there is nothing really, he says, you know, just like the strong doesn't mean anything to God. You see a man who's very powerful, next day he gets hit by a little virus and he's out in the hospital for a week, you know what I mean? So you see that physical strength doesn't really, can't really accomplish anything. But goodness also can't accomplish anything. He says both. Neither. A person be strong, you see, he can't make it. If he's good, also he doesn't make it. There's no difference between the two. He's not denying the Ashgacha. He's assuming that there is Ashgacha. But he's saying the Ashgacha seems to work in very funny ways. Because the Ashgacha seems to show that, first of all, there's no pattern. That just like the strong isn't successful. So, see, what happens is a person sees the relies on strength. So he sees that the physical might. Then he sees that doesn't work. So he says, well, maybe it's goodness. He substitutes goodness for strength. That's the way a person's mind usually works. You know what I mean? Like, the first thing is to assume that, well, the physical power, I wouldn't be with my physical strength. Then he sees that fails. But he's still looking for something that would substitute, that would give him the security of the physical strength. So then he looks for goodness, for righteousness. He says, righteousness will be the thing that will help me. But righteousness, we see, fails too. Just like the physical fails, righteousness fails also. So apparently in God's system, there's nothing that really could help you. That's what his argument is.
You can't win.
What? Correct
answer.
Yeah, what's the answer?
We can't worry about it. God has his own system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we're saying that when we look at the system, I mean, the system doesn't work.
Why does he...
You know what I mean?
It works unless...
Why does he still make change against God?
What?
It works until it goes for the stuff.
Why does he still make change against God?
Why?
Yeah.
What? Against so far. His argument is, if that is the case, if God works with his own system, I would agree if I could see his system. But the truth of the matter is, no pattern is discernible. No system is discernible. You see, the righteous fall, the robbers are being successful. I mean, that's God's system. The robbers are being successful. That certainly is his. If you're maintaining this Ashgacha, right? So you must say there's direct Ashgacha that the robber should be successful, right? Now, that's not crazy. You can't say that's part of his will. His will is that the robber should be successful. I mean, his will is that that there's no pattern. That's just crazy. So you're going to tell me it's just a chaotic world over here. Then we can't even discuss anything anymore. Then we might as well forget the whole thing. If you can show me a system, so I'll say... Yes, you're right. If you can show me a system... Just do me well. If you show me a system, then I would agree. I don't care what kind of system it is. But you're not showing me a system. You're just saying that there's a will. You can answer that there's no answer. Show me a pattern. I'll accept it. There's no pattern here. No, a person can invent all kinds of fantasies. You have to have something in reality to corroborate what you're doing. You can't just invent fantasies. Well, maybe God will pay me back in the next world. All this type of stuff. It's like you have all kinds of crazy things. Maybe this world is only an imagination. You have all kinds of answers. That's not an answer. To show you, we have to show Eve was not accepting anything. Unless you show physical facts, and then you can show the theory behind them. But just to make a theory, just to say, well, there's a tremendous divine world there. Yeah, where? I don't see it. Show me. See? That's the argument.
Yeah,
there's no pattern. There's no pattern. That was his argument against himself. No. Because the pattern, you don't see any pattern. You see that he removes, take 20, he removes the speech of men of trust and takes away the sense of the elders. I mean, this is wild. You see a man as a zakein muflug, and the nation needs him. He's a big chacham, and the nation needs him. All of a sudden, he gets seen now because
he doesn't
have enough blood going to his brain. I mean, where's the plan? Where's the pattern? Where's the pattern? Doesn't seem to work. Yes. If you're going to show me a system, ask me. Show me the system that I can abide by, and where man abides by, where it works.
Exactly.
Because you're maintaining. That's very. He's saying that. In other words, if you're saying that there's a system that man has to abide by, and once he abides by that system, then he'll be all right. Then he'll be safe. So you have to show me the system where it works. I want to see that system. Where is this animal? There's no system. We can't find a system. That's the crux of the argument.
An excellent argument.
That's right. Not based on reality. The truth of the matter is, that's what the arguments that he uses. I mean, that's the arguments that really most intelligent people will use the argument. They say, look, show me why you're very religious. Yeah. Show me where, religious people have less colds, less cancer, less heart attacks than other people? what is it? I mean, what is this? What are you trying to do? Okay? That's the argument. That's Eve's argument.
Rebbe?
Demonstrate and show me exactly. Let's take a scientific survey and find that. Find out if it's true or not. Yes.
Didn't Eve already say that when he said that?
Abe is asking like this. Get Abe's question.
In other words, their claim is that God is inscrutable, therefore they cannot tell what's going on. So he brings examples claiming that he doesn't know what's going on. So in essence, he's not really arguing that point.
Yeah, but that wasn't so much arguing that we don't know what's going on.
The point is that that's true, you can argue with, but you can never base the argument in reality. You just speculate. You can say almost anything that way. You can say maybe there's no world, maybe it's just your imagination.
That's right. That's the argument. In other words,
inherently contradictory, but basically it's just a complete speculation.
Let's take the argument pro and then the con of the Eve, right? The argument pro for this was that God, you can't understand it because it's part of God's will, part of his essence, so you can't understand his way. Now Eve says like this. Eve says that to say such an argument is an absurdity. If you have at least some basis, some phenomena to base your theory on a reality, so then you have room for an argument. But just to say that there's something there that we can't understand, that we see no pattern for, we see nothing, it's nothing, it's conjecture. It's the craziest, wild conjecture. That's his argument. Okay?
Where's the assumption?
You have to have some reality to base a theory on. There's no reality there. Just make up a theory and say, well, his will is inscrutable. So that's can't do that. That's his argument. You might not be able to understand the universe totally, but we have some idea of some patterns in the universe, some knowledge. But if you tell me there's no knowledge at all, it's just crazy, then forget about it. Then as far as we're concerned, it's worthless. Has to be some knowledge, something that we see in reality.
Some little pattern.
I mean, they don't grasp everything. We might even grasp a certain point. We see something beyond this that we can't go any further. You know, like in the world of physics today. But that doesn't mean that you don't have anything. He says you went a certain distance. You know, you see there's something there. Yes. If an argument is to have any meaning in the frame of reference of rational thinking, you have to have some reality there to relate to. Yeah, to back it up. You can't just say, well, maybe man's whole purpose is for a different universe altogether. After he dies, he goes into another universe, and everything he did here will make sense in that universe. Amen. Therefore,
his whole purpose is to go to a different planet.
It's crazy arguments.
It's not just
like most people give those arguments. They say, well, you don't understand why you're suffering now, because you'll be in a few more years, you see what will happen because of this, and this will happen, that. Whole chain of events. Oh, nice fantasy, you know. Fantasy can justify anything. As a matter of fact, but the funny thing is that they never justify. If you go and hit the guy, punch the guy in the face, it wouldn't start going that way.
Wouldn't explode.
They say, yeah, well, look at it this way. That punch, you understand, that punch was made in order that you should cause you in a few years, this will happen, that will happen, because you still have a grandchild and you'll be happy for the rest of your life.
You better punch and run.
That's right. He's liable to try to give you the same benefits.
In the fact we see that there's no hashgacha by man, I'll conclude that this crazy thing's going on by man. I'll conclude that man's purpose is something else and not within man's purpose at all. Man obviously is a purpose in itself, has no purpose from the fact that I see that all these things are going on crazy.
So then what's the purpose?
Man's purpose?
Yeah.
I
mean, it's some other purpose. I mean, you're aware.
But in terms of man.
Purposes, you can't show me any evidence for anything you're saying. So just this nice fantasy. I mean, it has no value to me. It's worthless. It's a worthless piece of philosophy.
It's not philosophy.
It's not a philosophy.
Fantasy.
It's a worthless piece of
philosophy.
For fantasy.
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 All right. Philosophy, fantasy.
Ready? Yes.
Wasn't there a time when, like during Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua and guys like that, when the system was working?
Look, my friend, let's go. This is not a philosophical argument. That's not based on Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's go. Next. 13 Rav. Lo, mine eye has seen all this. Mine ear has heard and understood it. What ye know, do I know also. I am not inferior to you. Notwithstanding, I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to reason with God. But you are plasterers of lies. You are all physicians of no value. See? Oh, that you would altogether hold your peace, and it would be your wisdom. Hear now my reasoning, and hearken to the pleadings of my lips. Will you speak unrighteously for God and talk deceitfully for him? Is that what you're trying to do? To tell lies in order to save God? Will you show him favor? You want to show favor to God? Will you contend for God? Would it be good that he should search you out? In other words, he's saying, if you're going to lie for God, would God be happy because of that? Or as one mocketh a man, will you mock him? He will surely reprove you if you do so, if you do secretly show favor. He's saying that if there is a God, and if God is just, right? And whatever we know about God is certainly that it's truthful, right? So therefore, when you're giving me these lies in order to defend him, on the contrary, he's going to search you out, and he's going to, and you're going to get it. That's what he says. He will surely reprove you. He will surely reprove you if you do secretly show favor.
I love that.
Secretly show favor. What he was telling them was, they should examine your mind, really, and you'll find, that's right, that underneath these arguments, you have a certain emotion there. And you're secretly, you're trying to favor God. That's what you're trying to do. Now, being deceitful, that's right. Now, being deceitful, yeah. You're not being objective. Now, being deceitful is not going to help you reply to any, because God, on the contrary, will get you for that, too. Because he doesn't like lying in any form. Yes. Take your argument.
Terminology position is pretty good, because you're all coming to cure him, right?
That's right.
They want to cure him thing. Now, you said the position of no value.
That's right.
All the remedies, there are really emotional remedies, and they're no good anyway.
Well, that's the Navi always says that there's illnesses of the soul and there's illnesses of the body.
There's what?
There's illnesses, just like there's illnesses of the body, there are illnesses of the soul. So he uses the term rofe for a philosopher, a person that teaches somebody, a person that straightens somebody out in philosophy is a rofe. Because rofe just means he perfects the organism. So you can have philosophical perfection, you have physical perfection. Same thing. Okay? Great. Okay. Now, shall not his majesty terrify you and his dread fall upon you? In other words, that you will definitely, when he gets you, he will scare you. Your memorials shall be like unto ashes.
Memorials?
Yeah, what's left? Fantastic premise. He says there is one thing that is sure. That in God's nature, truth is the most important thing. So therefore, I would rather, it is better for me to tell the truth insofar and be honest, completely objective, and not to try to deceive myself with nonsensical arguments and suffer the consequences, would be better than to be deceitful and to flatter him, because that certainly is further away from God than truth. So maybe in my state of truth I'm lacking some knowledge, and therefore I will get punished. But I certainly, if I would try to deceive myself, I would be in the worst state.
Further away.
See, that's what he says.
But he's saying
That's what he says. This is God's nature is such. There's one thing that I know about God, that His essence, His media of Emes. Right? Rav Chesven. So
that's the premise.
That's the premise. They can't question this.
Otherwise,
so I can have questions. I could talk. So whatever I'm going to say, I have a choice now. Either I'm going to not going to say anything, right? So I'll fool myself. Or else I have to say something which is wrong. You say it's not right to say it's about God. Well, I only have one course. Not like you people. You deceive yourself, you fool yourself, but I know one thing, that since to God, truth is most important, so therefore I am better off saying the truth, even though it comes out against his justice, than to keep quiet and try to fool myself.
But if
you see?
That's what he says.
I'm more in line with God than you are. That's what he says. That's right. You guys are more out of line than I am. You feel I'm saying things against God, that's not right. No, you're the one that's really away from God, because you're away from the truth. That's right. You're fooling yourself, at least I'm saying the truth. And even though he could do bad things to me, but still I am closer to him than I would be if I would deceive myself.
There might be a lot some other way. But
that's right. In this way I'm definitely closer. His essence is truth.
I mean, he's really giving it to them now.
That's right. That definitely is not so. That's what he says. See? This also should be my salvation. So, yes. Gamhu li lishua. Kilo. He says, oh, yes. interesting thing. Interesting. For these people, very interesting. Like this.
What's the next? Don't say anything on all this. Don't say nothing on all this.
Huh?
Well, this last 20 seconds, right?
What puzzle is this now? What puzzle did you say?
On Yud Gimel, Tes Vav, and Tes Zayin.
Yud Gimel, Tes Vav, Tes Zayin.
Achel. Ayachel means I will look forward to him. You know what I mean? How they translate it? It says, I'll trust in him. Yeah, that's like this. Trust in him,
Trust is not a good translation.
You never wait. Ayachel means liyachel means. That's right. Liyachel means a desire to meet. That's what ayachel means. To be miyachel. Rambam says to be miyachel. Cover Shabbos is to be miyachel for Shabbos to come. Stand there and wait for Shabbos. Look forward to Shabbos to come. That's what ayachel means. Trust is not a good translation. Okay.
Right.
One second.
How is that spelled?
Ayachel.
The law.
It should be with the law. It's a Phoenix Sif. Okay, it's Phoenix Sif. Phoenix Sif. Okay. It's an interesting Kriyan Ksiv. What is the Kriyan Ksiv here really? So here the Kriyan Ksiv
is
Rashi says? What does Rashi say? It's an ambivalent relationship. Right? The Tamad Law Yachel. A Kain ain't married or Peshim is Bar. Okay. So what he's saying is like this. What Eel is saying is like this. That the truth of the matter is that Eel didn't lose his love of God. Eev didn't lose his love of God. Because Eev's love of God, he says, one thing I know about God is that he loves the truth. He says, see what he says? He says, Gam hu li Yeshua. This to me is a Yeshua, ki lo lefono of Chonef Yavah. That one thing I know about God, that God will never accept anything that's untruthful. And therefore he's saying, my love of truth, at least I know, that's at least I have that much to go by. You know what I mean? At least whatever it is, it's true my relationship with him right now, insofar as his justice is concerned, I can't understand, right? It's true that I say it's wrong, it's unjust. Definitely unjust, right? But still I know one thing, I know that he loves truth, right? So that relationship I still have, insofar as I love truth, that's the relation. That relationship I still have with
him. He's saying that.
That's what he says.
He says, you may slay me, okay?
Right.
I will trust him, but I won't always perform. We're saying that the one thing here is truth, and that's not the part of the problem. The one thing is truth. Why should he worry more about trust him might slay him if he's being objective?
Oh, because he's saying, I don't know. He says, maybe God will slay me because I'm saying the wrong thing.
But the truth is the bond.
Oh, yeah, but the truth.
The won't punish him for thinking like,
No, that's justice. That's not truth.
They haven't figured out yet.
That they don't know. See, that's justice. God might have a system of justice which I don't understand.
It's truth.
That's right. No. Where if the truth is, if I say the truth, that what I think is the truth, but it's wrong. So insofar as I lack knowledge, I'll get something will happen to me. See?
But what he's saying is that truth is divine.
So truth is divine, right. But what I'm saying is not the truth. He's not saying the truth. He still isn't saying the truth.
But he's saying that God shouldn't kill him because he's telling
you. No, that's justice. Right. That's justice. Maybe...
Well, we don't understand justice.
That's it. We don't understand justice.
He thinks God's justice is...
In other words, his statement is a conflict. In other words, yes. In terms of justice, he might be saying something which he deserves to be killed for. But at least he's saying what he truthfully thinks. So at least insofar, one part of his nature is definitely in line. Essentially, in line with truth, but his statement might not be in line with truth. So he might get slain because his statement isn't in line with truth. You see? But still, he's better.
That's not in line with the fact that truth is divine, according to Bruce Brown.
Truth is
doesn't flow. That's
no.
Why justice is
understandable. That's right. His justice I don't understand. Let's say, for instance, if I say something which is truthful, which I think is truthful, but because I'm on that level of understanding, I'll be slain. Right? In other words, let's say a little kid will say, hey, daddy, that's not fair. So they say that the little kid that doesn't understand his father really is fair, you know, and the statement, if a child is at that level, he'll be destroyed. See? Mm. So it's truth, but it's not justice. You know what I mean? So he says, but still, I know that still God's nature is essentially truth, right? That God loves truth, so therefore I'm better off saying it than fooling myself. Even though I might be destroyed, I'm still better. I'm still more in line with his nature by saying it.
Well, because if truth is divine, you should be punished for
it. No, that's not necessarily true. That's justice, right? In other words, you're not being punished for truth. You're being punished for not understanding. Let's say God's will is that you'll be punished for not understanding a certain thing. Right. That's what you want to understand. Okay.
This is one question I gotta leave.
Go ahead.
Let me ask.
Do we go there?
No. Seems like cosmological. Okay. Nice like this.
Hey. How does he know that God's what is he?
Deceit and lying is only a human trait. The reason why a person lies, the reason why a person is deceitful, is because he wants to achieve a certain end, you see, which he cannot achieve, in view of a certain reality. So he has to be deceitful. But for God, that's absurd. See? That's what he said. For God, that's absurd. So therefore, it's ridiculous to say that God is, would lie. So God is only, with reality, because all reality stems from God. When we say God is truthful, it's not like a person's truthfulness. See? Because God is, the source of all reality. You can't be any lies. It's impossible. A person lies because he wants to touch his reality, achieve a certain personal aim. He needs to believe in reality. God is a source of reality. God can't, it's impossible. Who's going to lie to? Who's going to cheat for us? It's ridiculous. It's impossible for God to cheat or to lie. I mean, to who? To what? Where? Absurd. That's right. His nature has to be truthful. That's because he's the source of all reality. We can distort reality. Because we have imagination, so we can imagine all the other way. Maybe I'll say, make a game. But God can't, so who's he going to who's gonna do it to? Right, he's going to lie to us.
He's
thinking
committee of divinity.
Isn't he practicing right now that God is rational?
Yeah, that he holds, because you see the whole world the way it's structured. He brings things to that, that God is rational. That's
right. Therefore, God's knowledge can be faulty.
His knowledge can be faulty because he's rational.
Well, what is irrational mean?
Irrational.
Rational!
Isn't he promising that God is irrational?
No, he's promising there's no justice. He doesn't understand justice. He says, he can't say God's irrational. You see, the whole world is created by an irrational being, and everything, the mountains and the water and the life and everything is all from an irrational being. That's absurd. Okay. Things work too well to be...
an argument of justice.
As far as justice is concerned, so he doesn't understand justice. It doesn't mean God's irrational. He knows that God's irrational. Okay. Let's go.
What pasuk?
In what?
13.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Hear diligently my speech and let my declaration be your ears. Behold, now I have ordered my cause. I know that I shall be justified. Who is he that will contend with me? For then would I hold my peace and die. All right? So it's interesting. He says, then I would hold my peace and die. Remember what we said in the beginning? We said that that was the only thing he was living for. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
What?
Find out.
Yeah, to find out. That was the last thing. That's what he says. He says, "Me yoyarvim adi kiato achrish veicha." So if you'll show me that I'm wrong, then I'll die. That's it. Because that was the only thing left for him to do. Before, the only thing left for his energy to go to was to try to sit down with his friends and see if he could discover what the situation is.
Then so why have you shown that he's wrong?
As I said, if you show him that he's wrong. No. That he's assuming is, if you show him that his philosophy is wrong, this is the way things have to be, then he'll just die. That's it. In other words, once he reaches the answer, then he's going to die. He doesn't assume he's going to change his whole life over. That's crazy. Okay. Now this is like this. Come on, what are you doing?
What? Yeah. Change whole life over?
What? You don't get that.
He was going to change his whole life over.
He sees it's too late. It's all over for him. It's all over. The man sees it's all over for him. So don't think he wants to do this. Understand why the situation occurred. Now, if you can show me why I'm unjust, show me what I did to deserve. If you can show me I did something and I deserve this and I'm supposed to die, he says, now I'm going to die. I'll lie down and die. That's it. I have no more energy left. The only thing he wants to understand is this phenomenon itself. You see? That was the only energy he had left, was to study this phenomenon. That's it. Now, if you show me why I'm supposed to die, so then I'll die. That's it. See, but he didn't mean that he didn't offer these false hopes, full of false hopes. That he wanted an answer. He wanted an answer that makes sense. Exactly. Why did this happen to me and why am I destroyed? That's it. Explain it to me and I'm finished. That's right. That's right. I would say, well, look, I might as well, I was from all my life, I might as well accept this and die and have a little bar.
Oh, boy.
But that's what he says. He says, I'll take my flesh and my my teeth. You know, take my life in my hand. He says, I'll argue with him to the end. I want to understand.
The end might be soon as he thinks.
That's right. That's the thing, even the average person, huh? So might as well die from, you know. Save you doing say goodnight. Okay. Yes. Okay, now let's go. So what did he say? Only two things don't do to me. He says, then will I not hide myself from thee. withdraw thy hand far from thee, from me. Withdraw thy hand far from me. In other words, don't physically oppress me so that I can't argue. And let not thy terror make me afraid. Okay? Two things. Don't disturb me physically so that I can't continue the argument, or mentally. That's what he says. Yes.
Physically or
mentally. Says the only thing. Just don't do that to me. Don't put your hand on me either physically or mentally so that I can't argue with you. That's the only thing I don't want you to do. He says, then call thou and I will answer, or let me speak and answer thou me. How many are mine iniquities and sins? Make me to know my transgression and my sin. Wherefore hidest thou thy face, and holdest me for thine enemy? Will you harass a driven leaf? Will you pursue the dry stubble, that you should write bitter things against me, and make me to inherit the iniquities of my youth? You put my feet also in the stocks, and look narrowly unto all my paths. You draw yourself a line about the soles of my feet, though I am like a wineskin that consumes, like a garment that is moth-eaten.
No.
In other words, what are you saying over here?
You're still picking on me.
Now we're saying, yeah, that's right. He's saying that either the reason why he's doing it to me is because of my sins, in which case I say, let me know what the sin is, or else the only other possibility is that it's your will to destroy me. Now what kind of sense does that make?
It's justice.
Who am I that you want to destroy me?
Yeah, we just have a
question. Okay. Well, you refuse the argument. Refuse the argument because he showed that the argument says, and you're saying that it's his will, but there has to be some pattern. You have to show me some pattern to base it on. Just to say that it's his will, anything is his will, that's a crazy answer. Anybody get an answer? That's what he told him. He says, you're a very wise man, and wisdom will die with you. You know?
Well,
and it did. Guys like you, wisdom dies. Man is born of a woman. Man that is born of a woman. Now he goes into a new thing. This is a funny thing what he's going into now. He says, man that is born of a woman is of few days and full of trouble. Okay? He comes forth like a flower and withers. He flees also as a shadow and continues not. And do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me to judgment with you? What's his argument here?
Do you?
He's saying this. He's saying that you, if God judges man, it has to be in the framework of man. That's what he's saying. It doesn't make sense to say that God should judge man in a framework that's not human. Like he said before, he says, you bring the sins of my youth against me. He says, you make me inherit the iniquities of my youth. Because right. Everybody has avarice, you know? The person on his way to perfection has to do sins. It's impossible. Right? So sin is a part of a person's development. Impossible to avoid it. Matter of fact, I mean, we don't hold that in the Yadis that a person doesn't have avarice. Constant tshuva. A person makes a mistake, always doing tshuva, right? He builds on the on his avarice, seeing the avarice of the past. So he says, so therefore, the only type of justice if you're going to say that a man who lives that way, and because he had sins in the past, like he's not perfect, so that's why you're going to bring judgment against him. Then you're not talking about man. That's not man. He says, man's life is, seeing his days are determined. Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. In other words, man is not, man comes from unclean, he comes from physical, and he can't be clean. Seeing his days are determined, the number of his months is with thee, and you have appointed his bounds that he cannot pass. Look away from him that he may rest. Till he shall accomplish as a hireling his day. Okay? So what is he saying? He's saying like this. He says...
Isn't that contradicted to his nature to bring a clean one out of an unclean one?
Can't. You can't do it.
It's impossible. It's contradicted to his nature.
That's right. Okay. He's saying like this. Just a second. He's saying like this. Just 1 second. Man who's conceived in a physical way can never be pure. His days are limited because he's physical. Everything in his nature is based upon the physical. He has physical limitations. So therefore, how could God come into judgment with such a man on the basis if you're going to tell me that God is judging me because I did certain sins? He says then he's not judging me as a human being. The person has to sin. You understand what I mean?
No,
that doesn't accept. That is
that doesn't accept.
He says, I don't see any patterns. He knocked that off. He went back to he accepts what's the name's argument.
So far,
I'm going to reject. But now he's going back to the idea. The only idea that makes sense to him is that there must be something. He can't say, well, look, you did this little sin, that little sin. That's ridiculous. Man has to sin. By nature. Can you take something clean out of something unclean? I mean, man is created as a physical being. He has instincts. He's an instinctual creature. So how could he not sin? It's impossible. It's not going to try and sin justice. So he says, so God's justice has to be in the framework of man. He says, the way you attack me, it's as if I'm not a human being. That's not right. What?
I thought we just said we don't have framework.
No, I told you, knock that off. So for his argument, he rejected real justice. You see? He's going back to that argument. Okay?
Right.
Because he said, what he's saying is like this. The only sense that it's possible to make is that there is some justice. He rejects Sofer's argument that there's a divine will. That we don't see anything about, so forget that. The other possibility was compensation. He knocks that off, too. So the only possibility is that there's some type of justice, right? Now, well, yeah, but what kind of justice does it have to be? That God has to deal with me in my terms? He can't deal with me in crazy terms?
God,
what?
Shouldn't I knock off the other concept to the system that man has to conform to? He's saying that man inherently can't conform to that system. The man simply has to conform to system, right? So you say that is crazy because man inherently can't conform to the system?
No, I don't know if he can't conform to the system. Why can't he? Why not? That would be his problem. He said, look away from him that he may rest. So he shall accomplish something. He said, okay. Now it's like this. For there is hope of a tree. Now this is a funny thing. He said, there's hope of a tree if it be cut down that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. Though the root thereof wax old in the earth, and the stock thereof die in the ground, through the scent of water it will bud, and put forth boughs like a plant. But man dieth and lieth down. Yea, man perisheth, and where is he? As the waters fail from the sea and the river is drained dry, so man lieth down and riseth not. Till the heavens be no more, they shall not awake, not be roused out of their sleep. He's saying like death is final. And thou wouldest hide me in the netherworlds, that thou wouldest keep me secret until thy wrath be past, that thou wouldest appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man die, may he live again? All the days of my service would I wait, till my relief should come. Thou wouldest call, and I would answer thee. Thou wouldest have a desire to the work of thy hands. But now thou numberest my steps. Thou dost not even wait for my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and thou heapest upon mine iniquity. And surely the mountain falling crumbleth away, and the rock is removed out of its place. The waters wear the stones, the overflowings thereof wash away the dust of the earth. So thou destroyest the hope of man. Thou prevailest forever against him, and he passeth. Thou changest his countenance and sendest him away. His sons come to honor, and he knoweth it not. And they are brought low, but he regardeth them not. But his flesh grieveth for him, and his soul mourneth over him. What is he saying? What is his argument?
He's saying, gives along the way, trying to follow everything up, and he bears you down.
There's two types. So now we see that God's actions are destructive for man, right? So there's two types of destruction. You can cut a tree down and let the water, but the water will cause it to sprout again. So the tree could live again, has another chance. So, but with man, it isn't that way. Because with man, once you destroy a man to a certain degree, that's it, he's finished. Emotionally, psychologically, it's certainly true. Person reaches a certain amount of psychological pain, he's permanently damaged. And you can't do anything to bring him back. Like, let's say, for instance, the person loses a child. Something he can't get over anymore. He might have other children, but he still can't get over that loss. The loss will always be there. Always remember those children that he was related to. See? So it's something which is, it's not like a tree that you cut him down and it'll start growing again like nothing ever happened before. So man is a being who
doesn't regenerate.
He doesn't regenerate. The loss is a permanent loss.
Rambam says that so far the argument is that God's justice is a different system of justice. It's not a justice which is dependent, which is centered, which man is at the center. God has his own system of justice, and man plays a role, and man has to abide by God's justice. God doesn't abide by man's justice. There is a rule, there is laws of justice, but man has to abide by God's laws of justice. Now, it doesn't go by man's. If he can't abide, that's too bad. Ah, he falls on the wayside and he dies. That's the way it is. It's the way of the universe. You can't dictate to God what he should do. God has his purpose in creation, and man is has to abide by that purpose. You can't ask why it is that way, because any why question, the result is that the answer is that this is God's nature. The old question, like why, who created God? Same answer. Can't ask that question because his nature is that he exists, right? So anything about God, you can't ask why, because that's the ultimate thing, beyond which you cannot go anymore. Every why leads to that, and that's the end of all whys is God. And that's it. There's no more whys. Okay? But in Sofer's words, there was an interesting thing. In Sofer's words, it said that he says, know therefore, that's in 11:6, know therefore that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. So we ask, we say, what does he mean? I mean, if he says that there's no system, if he says that there's no system which is man-oriented, in other words, everything is God's will, fine, that's good. But why does it mean that God exacts from you less than you deserve? Right? It's not a matter of less and more. It's just he doesn't care about what you deserve at all. Right? You know what I mean? So we said, because we want to mention about this, midas adin and midas rachman. What does it mean, midas adin and midas rachman? Midas rachman is that when God does an action to change something in the universe because of man, that's called midas rachman. Because actually, if he let man go on, he would perish. So since there's midas rachman, so God always exacts less. Okay, in other words, there are actions that are initiated by God for two causes, by two reasons. One reason is because inherently this is what's supposed to exist. And the second reason is because man causes a certain situation out of which he can't escape, so then God initiates another action. So that's considered midas rachman. So we said that's what it means that God exacts less than you deserve. There's another possibility that it means that God exacts less. That would be an answer. But I think that we could say something that's really in line with his very thesis. This thesis is that the system of justice is based upon God. So this is what I guess. God exacts from you less than you deserve. The thing is like this. The truth of the matter is you deserve nothing. That's what he's telling you. Because since justice is not man-oriented, and we only exist as an object of God's will, we have no rights. I mean, we exist as an object of God's will. So whatever God exacts from you is always less than you deserve. You deserve absolute zero. Do you know what I mean? You don't deserve anything. Because since, in other words, in terms of the universe, we have no rights. We have no claim against God. Do you know what I mean? So therefore, whatever he exacts from you is always less than you really deserve to have exacted. Because actually, you don't deserve anything. His whole thesis is that it's all God's will, right? So therefore, you don't deserve anything. So whatever he exacts from you, you can't say that he's not being fair. Whatever he exacts, actually, theoretically, he could exact more. I mean, it depends on his will. So you should be happy that his will ended over here, and that you have this much. That's what he means by God exacts from you less than you deserve. That fits into his whole thesis. See, the Rambam of justice. Because the Rambam, when he quotes the Tzofar, he quotes this statement also. He puts that in there. Why does he quote that statement? Apparently that's the way he learns. Because the question is, what do you mean God exacts less? If God exacts less, that's also an injustice. So why is he saying that? He's trying to show that God's just. If he exacts less, then it's no good either. The answer is, whatever he exacts is less than you deserve in terms of the philosophical principle. The philosophical principle is that you don't deserve anything. You see? So if whatever he asks of you, that's it. In man's terms, there's two philosophical frameworks. There's God's, and then there's your little framework. He says, now in your little framework, you're saying that you don't deserve this much, right? He says, your little framework is nothing. So therefore, whatever he takes from you is less. You know what I mean? In terms of your framework. That's what he means. Okay. Eliphaz's argument is that you haven't examined the situation properly enough. Actually, you've sinned. You're stubborn. You don't want to really accept that you sinned and investigate the crime and do tshuva and return to God. That was Eliphaz's argument. Okay? The standard argument. Okay. All right. The beginning from 15 till about where? Till about 6. 7. Till 7, right? He says, your iniquity teaches your mouth, and you choose the tongue of the crafty. Your own mouth condemns you, and not I. Yea, your own lips testify against you. Right? What does he mean? He means like this. He says, see, 4. He says, you do away with the fear. You do away with fear and impair devotion before God. What's the pshat? What does it mean?
Yerushalayim is gone?
Yerushalayim is gone, yeah. He means like this. See, Eve said that I am really better than you, because at least I'm honest. And truth is, since I'm truthful, I'm closer to God than you are. Right? You're giving me answers that are not truthful, even though you're trying to justify God. But that's bad, because God doesn't like false arguments. At least I'm honest. So I'm still closer than you are. Right? So he told him, he said, no. He says, you're not closer. Why not? Because you think you're being honest. But what you're doing, first of all, you're doing away, the reason why you say this is because you did away with one premise, which you're not allowed to do away with. And that is the fear of God. A person must accept this as a premise, that there's a fear of God. Yes, there's a fear of God. Now, what you're doing is, you're breaking that premise. And now you say that you're honest. You know what I mean? He's saying, if you would hold the premise of fear of God, then if you would not, in other words, because of your situation, you went away from the true premise. The premise is fear of God. Now, once you went away from that premise, of course, now you have a lot of questions. But if you would have really stuck with your fear of God all the way through, you see, then you would have seen, then you'd see things differently right now. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
What? No, you'd say what Eliphaz says.
No, you just said,
he's saying the reason, in other words, like this. The reason you maintain, you see, in other words, you maintain that you didn't sin, right? Okay, you maintain that you're just, right? Now, the reason why you maintain that you didn't sin is because you did away with the fear of God. If you wouldn't have done away with the fear of God, so then you would definitely, would maintain that you have to look in to see if you sinned. And you would really find out that you did sin. Do you know what I mean?
But he did look in and he didn't find.
What? He looked in and he didn't find. But he says, it depends how you look. If you look with the fear of God, then you'll really be able to find. But since you look without the fear of God, then of course you can't find. Do you know what I mean? In other words, let's say, again, if a kid would say he made a mistake, so he might think about it for a moment, but then he'll say, look, this kid's nuts, right? But if a great person would tell you he made a mistake, the Ram would tell you he made a mistake, you would definitely search in a different way. In other words, your searching is in direct proportion with the esteem with which you hold the individual who says he made a mistake, right? Now he says over here, we're speaking about God. So God says he made a mistake. Now I maintain that you said you didn't sin, but you say you didn't sin. You're not really. The reason why you're able to say this is because you're doing away with the fear of God. See, if you would really have the proper esteem for God, you'd make a proper search.